This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
Good morning, everyone. As many of you here have been practicing Zen for quite some time, and even for beginners, there's a reason why we read the Wisdom Heart Sutra at the beginning of our sitting. The Wisdom Heart Sutra is the central, most relevant and direct pointing teaching of Zen practice. And for many of you, when you read the Wisdom Heart Sutra, there's a tendency to look at it and try to understand it. All that arises from this teaching has come from meditative practice, the direct seeing of reality, of what's going on in one's own mind, which is universal, but also the heart of the Buddha's teachings. Well, people like to talk about the concept of emptiness in Wisdom Heart Sutra. It isn't a concept. It's like I like to talk about oranges. Oranges aren't a concept, you eat them. And the direct seeing, the direct experience that is discussed in the Wisdom Heart Sutra is a culmination of practice, of direct experience. Just like you can't really discuss the philosophy of oranges. You've got to eat it. The Wisdom Heart Sutra talks about Avalokiteshvara, which is Bodhisattva, or the compassionate one. In Chinese, they call him Guan Yin, one who observes the world, one who observes the sound of the world. That's what Avalokiteshvara means. And so one observes the world with compassion. Of course, that comes from clarity. Clarity of mind. Clarity free from desires. Or things to be this way or that way. A lot of people come to the practice, and a lot of people in spiritual circles and Buddhist meditative practice have a tendency to want something in from their practice. And that is directly against the clear seeing of reality, clear seeing of the unfolding of mind, body, presence. Great Wisdom Heart Sutra has another name. It's called Prajna Paramita Sutras. Prajna is translated as wisdom. but not the kind of wisdom that we normally generally understand, that comes from experience and of life and kind of direct experience of things. This wisdom comes from the clarity of mind, not an interpretation of experience. The clear seeing of all that arises, falling, and pass. And that clear seeing is not a clear seeing of a memory of the past. It's a clear seeing of the present. So when Avalokiteshvara saw the truth, he saw that all the mental images, and this includes your projections, the feelings that arise inside, all states of mind are empty of any permanent self nature. And this is a key to the practice. And we have a tendency in our practice that when things arise, not to our liking, they're kind of uncomfortable. Feelings of, you know, shame, guilt, disgust, all those negative feelings arise. We're like, ah, we don't want this here. We want the bliss. We want the joy. But they're all the same. Because when they arise, they all pass. And they have no intrinsic self-existence. Why? Because they are self-impermanent. And cannot be controlled. Can you control if you walk into a room and there's a smell there? Can you control to not smell it? It's impossible, right? Can you control what time it snows today? You can. Neither can you control whether or not your five aggregates, you know, the form, feelings, thoughts, volition, and consciousness. Neither can you control all those five things, how they rise and fall, and how they formulate, and how they disappear. This lack of the ability to control the manifestations of our inner reality is the essence of non-self. So when people in the practice see the arising of anger, of fear, of confusion, they're thinking, oh, I've been practicing for 10 years. What the hell are they doing here? Surprise, surprise, you have a body, you have feelings, you have sensations, you will have all of that reaction to the external world when it's triggered. And that's just the nature of how things are. And some of your conditioning and programming will arise when the right conditions presents. And that's a part of how things are as they are. So when we practitioner try to control these things, in essence, we're imbuing with them, with the sense of identity. With the sense that they are, in essence, real. Because if they weren't real, you just watch them roll by. Just like the clouds. Just like the storm. To fully accept the nature of how things are requires a radical acceptance of what unfolds. And the wisdom in the Heart Sutra talks about is the sense of experiencing, but at the same time not identifying with whatever arising and falling, and seeing their nature for what it is. They're empty. There's a tendency for our mind to jump in and go, I gotta figure this out. Psychoanalyze it. Imbued meanings into it. What I discovered after many years of then practice is you just need to understand it. And how do we understand anything? By clearing our minds of all judgments, all preconception, all perceptions of what it's supposed to be, but seeing it for what is. If you go to school and you have all these ideas in your head about the subject you're studying and your preconceptions, do you think you can take any new information in? Impossible, you can't. And that's the heart of understanding, is clearing our minds of all the memories, preconceptions, just to see things clearly as they are, so that we can pick up in new information. And not the new information's in terms of grabbing onto something and start analyzing it, but seeing it for what it is. And once you see it for what it is, there's a knowing, an understanding that arises, and a doing that follows, that is in alignment with what just presents itself. We don't have to think too much about it. Now, you have to be careful, because that doesn't mean that your mind can be in sloth and topper. And when you make that decision, there's a difference between clarity of mind and a mind that's foggy. A mind that foggy barely understands anything through the fog. So as meditators, we need to be able to recognize these two things and understand whether we're sleepwalking and saying, okay, I'm not thinking, I'll just do what arises. Well, that's sleepwalking and automaton. So, when looking at this emptiness that is discussed in the Heart Sutra, one understands that we're not just exposed to external world, but the external world is experienced through the internal world. And the internal world, our consciousness, our ability to sensate, our feelings, our thoughts, our perception, mediates everything that comes from the external world. And And as long as we do not understand the process of these things as they arise and fall, as long as we're not in our Buddha nature, deeply observing the arising and falling of all these mechanisms inside, we are sleepwalking. There is no clarity. And so from that, suffering ensues because an identity, a self, is given to everything that I see. It's almost like an automatic process. Most people are not aware of it. Very few people are aware of this process inside themselves. So, when the Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattvas look upon all of these processes goes on inside the mind, he becomes deeply aware of the inherent emptiness of it all. Because the funny thing is, these things you can't really taste, you can't really touch, you can't, it's all very ephemeral. It's like a phantom that comes and goes. Yet we all make it very real. So does he really say there's no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind? Yes and no. Because giving its meaning, giving it essence, is bringing it into reality, making it real. Weaving a story out of all these happenings is making it real. And when the clear seeing is able to see all of this clearly, the realization that all this, all this, the world of sight, world consciousness, even the idea of ignorance and the end of ignorance, even the idea of suffering and the end of suffering, all of it is relative. And what is relative is real. In the absolute sense, they aren't relatives or absolute. So is it because in our mind we have this goal, we have this idea about what liberation is, that we fail to see that liberation is simply not identifying with what is here, being able to allow it to rise and fall without interference, and having the wisdom to be able to respond and know what to do without the intellectual mind jumping in, kind of trying to fix everything? Because that's what it does, right? You get a little emotional and the mind jumps in and says, and that's usually the case, right? You look at it and you go, what? Oh my God. It's not that big of a deal. What's happening right now? And it rises and it falls. And you see it rise and you see it fall. It never stays. Unless you prefer staying in the theater after the movie is over. That's essentially what we do when we try to push away. Or we try to hold on to a good thing that will come to pass. So in essence, the depth of understanding of our practice is about just being with what is arising, falling, and seeing it for what it is. And a lot of times when we practice, especially when our practice deepens, there's a lot of discomfort in that because there's a lot of unconscious stuff that comes up and it's like, it's not pretty. It's not fun. What happens to my transcendent stuff? My insight that was really cool when I first practiced? Jeez. This is not what I'm expecting. This is not what I got into Zen for. Surprise, surprise, this is exactly what you got into Zen for. Because if you treat the uncomfortable stuff that arises any differently than you treat the good stuff that arises, you're discriminating. You're discriminating and not seeing its true nature. You're muddling your clarity. And when you don't have clarity, you have something called want. Desire. And desire messes things up. It doesn't allow you to see or understand things clearly. Anything. So where does insight come from? Where does this insight of liberation from this Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, where did it come from? In the beginning, it's very clear. It comes from deep meditative awareness. It doesn't come from discussing it. So it comes from the mind that's able to still. The mind that doesn't wander and get hijacked by thoughts, feelings, sensations. Mind without craving or desire. And just as I'm saying this, probably many of you would have the idea, I want no craving and desire. I want that mind. That's exactly craving and desire. The craving, the desire, and letting it go. Because it doesn't matter what the hook is. It doesn't matter what's at the end of that hook. The bait is, the hook and the line is the same. As long as craving and desire arises in your mind, there's no clarity. That includes the desire to push things away, to not want something. That's wanting, to not want something. When we experience discomfort, when we see things we don't like very much. Rather than surrender and accept to see it clearly, and the right doing will arise from that insight. We jump in and interpret. We jump in and interpret. Analyze. Try to think our way before actually truly seeing it for what it is. So, this transcendent wisdom is tricky because in a disturbed mind, and I don't mean the arising of feelings and emotions, there's nothing wrong with the arising of feelings and emotions and thoughts. It's a disturbed mind is one that cannot stay in the awareness as these things happen. Cannot stay to see that our nature is separate from all these happenings. And without being able to steadily observe without interference, in experience, one cannot have this clear seeing and allow transcendent wisdom, the wisdom of clear understanding from the clear seeing, to arise. And so, prajna, this wisdom of clear seeing, does not arise, and then we lose our way. But a part of ourselves says, well, how do I know I'm lost? I might be going the right way. You know you're lost when you're hearing that thought. Because if you were in your wisdom mind, of course, you never have that question. You never believe it. So, this distorted perception that comes from the identification with all that arise and fall prevents us from being in nibbana, in nirvana, which is the end of suffering, the stopping. What's nirvana? The cooling, stopping of the flame of desire. All past, present, and future, all awakened ones. And we're talking about people who are awake or ones that are able to be awake. All compassionate ones rely upon this transcendent wisdom of meditative awareness to experience the Supreme Awakening. And I'm not talking about Supreme Awakening that happened to you 20 years ago. Supreme Awakening that happens now. If you're not awake now, being awake 20 years ago makes no difference. It's like saying, I ate 3 days ago, I don't need to eat now. The disturbed mind needs clarity. Yeah? The sleeping mind needs awakening. Just like we need food and water every day. It needs that in every moment. Like we need air. And it's very clear that this practice, this clear seeing, can clear the mind and clear suffering. Very clearly. One can only surrender to what's happening without manipulation, without trying to control what's going on, because that is a form of desire control. To be able to respond effectively to the present. How does that work? Well, I can't tell you how to peel an orange because you're gonna have to pick it up and peel it. It's one of those things that really cannot be put into words. And even when it's put into word, it reduces the truth, or it's not the truth, it's not the actual experience. It's just a concept. Just like we can't eat a concept of a salad. We can only dig our forks in, put it in the mouth, chew it in order to be full. So the Heart Sutra isn't a philosophy, and a lot of people misunderstand the Heart Sutra. This philosophy of emptiness. Not a philosophy. Something you put into practice is a lived experience. See, I spent a good chunk of my early years studying Zen, studying the text, you know, studying a lot of theories, being on the therapist chair, marveling at the philosophy, all the knowledge, didn't know how to practice. Because it's hard to find somebody with a direct experience, and my teacher was in retreat. Did it do anything for me? After 10 years, I said to my therapist, I said, is this it? Are you saying that this is the best we can go do? And she's like, yeah, we can manage whatever is happening. And I thought, this is suffering management. I knew I had to believe that there was something more different. And there is. And after Kensho, it started to make sense. Because I was having the experience that I've only learned about in the texts, in the books, in the philosophies that I've read for many years. But it's more than what is written. That direct experience transformed my way of looking at the world. My way of looking at myself. What self? There's a bunch of things that arises and falls over time, man. And there's this energy that's very inward. Me, 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 me. That's composed of a bunch of feelings, thoughts, sensations, deep ingrained beliefs, and even the felt sense of being different, separate. And all that is compiled in this unconscious mind. One layer on top of each other. Controlling my every movement, my every thought, action, perception. And with the awakening, the clearing happens. It's almost like pieces falls off. And if you allow those pieces to just fall off as they come and go, without trying to control it, literally, you sit on it. That's what I did. I sat on it, watching it come. No matter how uncomfortable, painful sometimes. The clearing happens. And after a while, even if they arise, there's no energetic charge to them. You see the difference between your Buddha nature and all that rises and falls. And that's why. And after a while, they're all empty, felt, ephemeral. Where is this coming from? This is coming from residing in your Buddha nature, the awakened nature inside of you. That's able to see things clearly without any hint of desire of things to be different than they are. No goal, no path, no hanging perception on it. And then it becomes all empty. And when this wisdom hits you, it hits you like a command, a very silent command. Sort of like, oh, you just kind of know. Where is that no coming from? I don't know. But it's very hard to be able to clear the space enough to see it or to know it. Sorry, there's nothing to see. It's not an object. To know it. The mind jumps in and says, I know this stuff. This must be it. That's when you know you're completely deluded. Anything that has a voice, that's your thought. That's not your wisdom mind. Anything that has language, that's your thought. That's not your wisdom mind. Anything that has a feeling, that's your unconscious stuff. That's not your wisdom mind. Anything that comes from a sensation, that's your body, that's not your wisdom mind. Anything that comes from perception, and this one is the trickiest. Until you get to a certain meditative awareness, you can see perception rise and fall. But anything that comes from your perception, that's not your wisdom. So, the Heart Sutra is a great pointer for meditators. As long as we're not looking to get somewhere. As long as we're not desiring for a certain outcome. As long as we're willing to accept unconditionally what's happening and try to see it clearly. Just allowing it to clearly be seen. As long as we stop searching for something. I think the most interesting and relevant pointer in what is called enlightenment, is the end of all searching. If you can see your mind searching for something, some truth out there, some place out there or in here, then you're not on the right path. Let go of the search. Give up the search. And you'll find. And don't try to, I'll give up the search, so you give me the fine, okay? There's no condition in this ultimate acceptance. There's no hidden agenda. There's only this. Give up the search. Search for something better. It is until we practice and we deeply practice and surrender to the search, you know, the end of the search for liberation, and look into our own minds for understanding, that the teachings of the Heart Sutra becomes so relevant. For many years, I grew up chanting this Heart Sutra every time I go to temple, even sometimes at home, and reciting it, writing it, thinking it is a great philosophy, but it isn't. It's practice direction. It's like, sort of like saying, you know, the recipe is a great philosophy. No, you're supposed to cook with it. That's what a recipe is for, right? So today, I'd like you to read the Heart Sutra, or sometime next week, read the Heart Sutra, and see what part of your practice is applying that. How does that work into your heart, your practice? All the pointers that is pointing. This is essentially the key to liberation. The Heart Sutra dismisses everything and saying, this is not it, this is not it, this is not it, this is not it, this is not it. I can't say what it is, but it keeps saying, this is not it, this is not it, this is not it. Sounds like your Zen teacher? Yes. What is it? Only you can directly see that. And when you stumble upon it, you don't get excited because it's not a present. It's not any fireworks. There's no excitement involved in seeing that. But there is a deep clarity and a deep understanding that transpires, and a deep knowing, this is it. Other than that, there's nothing else. And that's where our faith and practice comes from. True faith. That's the direct knowledge of things as they are. Shucks, I didn't get those moments yesterday or today or even now. I want that. That's the mind jumping in, modeling, you know, darkening the room again. It's creating the confusion. Don't get tricked by it. It's what's happening now. It's what's going on inside now. You don't want what's going on inside now? Too bad. It's happening. You can deny it's happening and gaslight yourself, but it's happening. Accept it fully for what it is. Understand it. Refrain from judgment. And the wisdom will arise.
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.